The following is a production of Omnis.tv.
Tonight's show, we're talking NBA Finals, Jim Tressel and the Ohio State Buckeyes, Major League Baseball over the holiday weekend, and the box office, and much, much more, happening now only on Unsigned. Hey, everybody. How's it going? My name is Ryan, and this is another episode of Unsigned on a nice, hot Tuesday night here in Tennessee. I think it's pretty much hot everywhere in the country. Can't ask really for much better weather over the holiday weekend. Hot, humid, sunshine, clear skies. Doesn't get much better than that. Now, before we jump into things tonight, I'd like to read a little something, kind of a show programming change that we're doing. I'll go ahead and cover this with you here at the top of the show. Tonight's episode will be our last where we do both video and audio, where it's going to be available after live broadcast. Starting next week, only MP3 audio will be available as a downloadable podcast. If you subscribed to us on iTunes or RSS video feed, please subscribe to the MP3 audio version for future broadcasts. The live show will still broadcast all live video feeds. Thank you. Now, with that being said, Memorial Day was yesterday. I want to say, hope everyone had a great Memorial Day. And I also want to say thank you to the men and women of our country who have served both past, present, and those who are going to serve in the future. Thank you very much for giving us the liberty and freedoms that we sometimes take for granted, unfortunately, but giving us those freedoms to, cook out and see movies and, do the things that we do here on this show and vice versa and all over, country, the United States of America. Now, funny story, before we begin tonight, my wife and I, last night, Memorial Day is a little late. She's like, do you want to go grab some ice cream? I was like, you know what? Ice cream sounds good. Memorial Day, let's get some ice cream, right? So we go to Dairy Queen around the corner here. I get myself a shake. She gets herself a sundae. And we got her looking, and they have a little sign there, And the sign was supposed to read, remember those who gave all, except they misspelled the word remember. It says, remember those that gave all. Thanks, Dairy Queen, for your lack of spell check on your sign. But at least the thought was there. I'll give him credit for that. On that note, let's jump right into things. The NBA Finals, we have former ESPN reporter, longtime Cleveland sportscaster, Jeff Sack, again on the show. Jeff, how you doing today?
I'm doing fine, my brother. How about yourself? I'm glad you had a good weekend, and I appreciate your sentiment about yesterday. We tend to forget why Memorial Day is celebrated and honored in this country, and I'm very glad that you brought that up, and a great sentiment that you shared with the audience just now.
Thank you very much, Jeff, and I hope you had yourself a nice, pleasant weekend as well.
It was gorgeous weather. Absolutely. I agree with you. You can't ask for anything better than this, though it's amazing here in the Northeast how many people are already complaining about the heat after the lack of spring and the treacherous winter that we went through this past year. To me, it can't get hot enough. As long as I've got air conditioning to sleep at night, I'm fine. And the warmer, the better. I like the lack of humidity that we've had over the past few days. And it was a welcome change from all the rain and gray skies that we had for most of the month of May.
I agree. In Tennessee, we've had a little bit, probably more of a break than you've had up there in the Northeast with sunshine, but it's definitely been hot. And I'm not complaining. I love it. It's going to be 90 plus, I think, the rest of the week, and I say thank you. Y'all take it. But tonight, as you know, Jeff, we got the NBA Finals finally kicking off after a big delay. Game one tonight in Miami. Now, I was doing some research. StubHub is a program that you can buy tickets online, and I thought this was interesting that there are over 800 tickets available for tonight's show in Miami.
Really?
Yes. It came as a shock to me considering, and I've criticized their fan base, so they put white chairs on the seats there to make it look like it's full for regular season games. Okay. You know what? I can maybe give that a pass, but it is the finals. Yes, it's game one, but it's a home. You have, you know, two of the, really the best players in the league, you know, Dwayne Wade and LeBron James on your team playing, you know, the modern day Larry Bird, as it were, Dirk from Dallas. Does that surprise you? There's that many seats available for game one in Miami?
It reminds me of Atlanta over the last few years in the playoffs. And I think that's the common trait between the two cities, is both of these cities are really made up of transients. I mean, there aren't a lot of native Miamians out there. It's mostly snowbirds who move from the Northeast or the Midwest, and a lot of, you know, folks who have immigrated over from either Cuba or Central America or South America. So there isn't really a large native population, and probably because of that, there's mixed loyalties when it comes to NBA teams. I'm sure there are a lot of Celtics and Knicks fans down there, as well as Cleveland Cavaliers fans down there. So it probably, you can't probably compare the passion that we have in the Northeast or in the Midwest when I covered the Cavs, you know, as opposed to the weather down there and all the things to do in Miami that they have year-round, comparatively to, you know, what we have not being able to do during the winter months. So I think that's part of it. And again, as I said, I think mixed loyalties have a lot to do with it as well. But I'm watching this on ABC as we speak right now, and it looks like a pretty full crowd out there, that's for sure.
Yeah, I was just surprised to see that on Twitter earlier today. It was about 3 or 4 hours before tip-off, you know, having that many seats available. Now, as you know, I grew up in Northeast Ohio, as you know, and a lot of people in the Cleveland area are going to be, you know, looking on at this series and almost fear that, you know, the chosen one, as it were, LeBron James, is inching closer and closer to winning his first ring. He's four wins away now. As we inch closer to that, and this series literally gets tipped off as we speak, with the people of, you know, Cleveland, you know, it's been well documented how, you know, that city as a whole, for the most part, feels about, you know, LeBron and the way he made the decision to go to South Beach with him and his boy, Dwayne Wade, and Chris Bosh and company with Pat Riley and that whole thing. Who do you think more pressure is on? I mean, LeBron James to win a title, or is more pressure on Dirk Nowitzki to win a title at this stage in his career?
Very good question. And Michael Wilbon just brought that up a couple of minutes ago on ABC as I was watching the pregame. And I would have to agree with what Wilbon said. Basically, these three guys have put pressure on themselves. They've talked about winning a championship since the day the three of them got together and came out on that stage in Miami basically posed and preened for the crowd. So they say in private conversations with Wilbon and other members of the media that they will consider this a failure if they do not go on and win this championship. Of course, Nowitzki may not have another chance, and he could go down along with guys like Stockton and Malone, who were fantastic NBA players and Hall of Fame basketball players, but never won a championship. But I would say the pressure right now at this juncture would be more on Miami, and again, basically because these three guys have imposed it on themselves. Your thoughts on that?
Well, I think that, yeah, the pressure, I think LeBron has definitely brought to win a ring. I mean, he's only 25, soon to be 26. He has a lot more basketball, I think, left than Dirk does. But I, you know what, Dirk being from Germany, I think he's the best European player we've seen. I don't know if anyone can question that. I mean, unbelievable. I mean, a guy who's almost 7'1" to play the way he does. And there was a interesting segment on ESPN several days ago that I had just happened to catch. And he was talking about free agency last year, Dirk Nowitzki from Dallas. And he was talking about how, you know, he had spent, 12 years there. And he thought about going to a different team. And then he stopped and he says, you know, I couldn't see myself putting all this time into an organization, and as good as they've treated me, Mark Cuban included, at Dallas or in Dallas, to put another jersey on and walk away and go win a title somewhere else. Now, I stopped and I thought to myself, here's a guy who's not, he's not from Dallas. You know, he didn't grow up outside of Dallas. He didn't grow up in Texas. He grew up in Germany. And here's a guy who spent, you know, 12 years, you know, working, you know, kind of, you know, the kind of old fashioned mentality as far as NBA goes. You know, I'm going to stick it out and I'm going to try to win this thing, you know, with just a nice cast around me. And then you look at the other side of it where you have LeBron James, you know, homegrown product, grew up, you know, 40 minutes, you know, southeast of Cleveland in the Akron Canton area, spent 7 years and said, you know what? It's greener down south. You know, you've covered LeBron and we talked about it on the last time you were on the show. What do you think about that? And you see a guy like Dirk, you know, who's, you know, not even from that area, and says, you know what, I'm going to stick it out. And you have a guy who grew up in Northeast Ohio where the fans would love him from top to bottom and worship him if he ever brought a ring. They'd put a statue, I think, out front of Cleveland if he won a ring at the Quicken Loans Arena to just walk away.
They'd have a statue on Public Square, and it'd probably be about 10 feet tall, to be perfectly honest with you. I think I mentioned this the last time I was on the show, Ryan. I was one of, if not the biggest proponent of LeBron James in the media since the time the young man first donned the Cleveland Cavaliers uniform. I was always impressed with the way he handled himself both on and off the court. He had a savviness with the media at 18 years old that really just absolutely amazed all of us. We saw at that point over the years, and I covered him for the first 3 years of his career plus the finals in 2007, that he could get a little bit of a diva-ish mode within him, but we all kind of turned our heads because he was the star of the team and their best chance of winning an NBA title. With that being said, I was really bothered by and really shocked the fact that he did leave that team only because of what he had been saying throughout his NBA career. The fact that he was a leader, the fact that his teammates relied on him, the fact that he called his teammates his family. And then, lo and behold, when he became a free agent, he didn't have the confidence in himself that the fan base in Cleveland and a lot of NBA pundits had in him. And he didn't think he had enough ability to be able to be numero uno and lead an NBA team to a championship. And I lost a lot of respect for the guy when he did that. And also, of course, he lost my admiration forever. Now, I've got to admit, I gained back a lot of respect for LeBron during that Boston series because he didn't fold, and he basically won those last two games by himself. I will never admire him again. I will never like the man again, but he has gained back a lot of my respect by his performances during these last two series. And they are a team to be reckoned with, whether they win it this year or you know, they don't and then go on for the next few years, they're probably going to be the reigning power in the NBA East for the next few years with three young, talented players you know, to build around. You've got, as you just said, probably two of the best players in the NBA today in Dwayne Wade and LeBron, and Chris Bosh is an all-star player as well. So, you know, whether they win it or not this year, they're going to be a team to be reckoned with over the next few years. But, of course, you know, they went out and literally bought a championship by bringing these two mercenaries, if you will, in to win a title. And I don't think LeBron will ever have the status of a Michael Jordan or a Larry Bird or a Magic Johnson or even a Kobe Bryant because he did not stick with one team throughout his career. And when he had the chance to say, I am a leader and my team's going to follow me and I'm going to carry them to an NBA championship, he went to a place where there was already an established star and basically is now always going to have that reputation of hanging on D-Wade's coattails, and deservedly so.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, going back to the Boston series and then the Chicago series, that Game 5 debacle in Chicago last week, you know, as far as his basketball skills are concerned, I don't think, you know, the man can play some basketball. And it was evident, you know, in that Chicago series where he hit 2 3-pointers and hit that little jumper there. And I was like, yeah. I was like, yeah, I remember when he used to do that in Cleveland, you know, and it was kind of hard to watch, but it was, in a way, it was exciting to see. He's a very exciting player. I think that if he had the chance to do it over, I think he would have done it differently. A little late now, obviously, but switching gears on you, Jeff, you know, we look at, you know, this matchup, and we talked several weeks ago that it looks like we're going to have a Dallas-Miami matchup, a rematch of 2006. Now, well, sort of. I mean, at this point, you know, there's only 4 guys on these teams' rosters that played in that 06 series: Dwayne Wade, Udonis Haslem for Miami, Dirk Nowitzki, and Jason the Jet Terry for Dallas. Very different teams, very different cast for Dirk this time around. Dwayne Wade doesn't have Gary Payton, Alonzo Mourning, Shaquille O'Neal, Antoine Walker, or Jason Williams with him either. Looking at this Dallas team with Dirk, one of the only teams that is defensively is committed to the 2-3 matchup zone, an older team with Jason Kidd being the oldest guard to start in NBA Finals at 38, pushing 39. Sean Marion, getting older. Dirk has seen, you know, a lot of basketball at this point as well, a lot of playoff basketball too. How do you think Miami is going to handle the 2-3 zone when Dallas goes to that?
Good question. Let's talk about the teams per se as far as matchups. And unfortunately, as I said a couple of weeks ago, I do believe that Miami is a prohibitive favorite going into this series, and a lot of, unfortunately, other NBA observers have gone along with that. But the positive thing, if you're a Dallas fan, is the fact that you really only have to stop 3 players, and that being the big 3. Now, unfortunately, Boston and Chicago were unable to do it in the previous 2 series. Chicago, I didn't really think was going to have a chance, as we talked about the last time we spoke, because I didn't think they were athletic enough. I thought Boston's experience was going to carry them, but they faded down the stretch in a couple of key games. Dallas also basically was very, very fortunate in watching the Thunder basically self-destruct in those last 2 games. I mean, those were 2 games that they should have won. No ands, ifs, or buts about it. And even early on, Rick Carlisle said, you know, we could easily be down 0-2 right now instead of tied at 1-1. But they do have a lot more weapons at their disposal than Miami does. And one guy that I'm keeping my eye on is Tyson Chandler, because if he can perform at his best, and as he has at times with Jason Kidd throughout this season, they don't really have a guy that's going to be able to guard him. Their lack of a center could be their Achilles heel. So that's the guy that I'm really looking at as the possible X factor in this series. We shall see. I feel more secure about Dallas's chances now than I did a couple of weeks ago, only because they were able to take advantage of the opportunities that the Thunder gave them in those last 2 games. And Nowitzki is really chafing at the bit to get himself a championship this year. So anything can happen. And as we saw over these last series in the conference finals, a team can self-destruct very, very quickly, as both the Bulls did and the Thunder did in those last series. So as I said before, I still think Miami's the favorite going in, but I think Dallas has more of a shot now than I did a couple of weeks ago.
I hope you're right. I look at the way Miami closed out Chicago in those final 2 games. Some of the officiating in Game 5, I thought, left something to be desired in the third quarter in Chicago. Without saying, Miami did, you know, close the door, so to speak, on a 18-2 run to close that Game 5 in Chicago. The thing with Dallas, and I mentioned it a couple times on the show, when they don't, you know, obviously you can't play zone the whole time in the NBA, you'll get crushed. But the times that they switched that 2-3 matchup zone with Jason Kidd and Barea on the floor, two very quick guys. Jason Kidd, not as quick as he used to be, but still a very versatile player. And with Miami not having really a low post presence other than Bosch, and they don't necessarily go to him as much as maybe they should, I think that Dallas can force a jump shooting contest, at least for periods of the game. And if you ask the Los Angeles Lakers, if you get in the jump shooting contest with the Dallas Mavericks, you're in trouble.
Oh, you're going to lose. Absolutely.
Yeah, exactly.
And if you win and die by the jump shot, you're probably going to lose the game. Unfortunately, you're going with low percentage shots, and that is going to decrease your odds of being able to get it into the basket. I do like Barea a lot. He's a scrappy player, as he showed, especially during that Lakers series, and did a nice job against Oklahoma City as well. And Kidd, yes, is not the player that he was 7, 8, 9 years ago with New Jersey. But you know what? Every once in a while, as he showed a couple of times during that Thunder series, he can pull one out of his hat. And again, you know, they don't really have a legitimate point guard presence on the Heat. That being said, you've got two guys who can easily fill that role with James and Wade being the excellent ball handlers that they are. So that will definitely be an interesting matchup and see if they can take away the inside game of Miami. Right now, we're looking at a 13-8 game with Miami up ahead, and there's been a lot of turnovers in this game so far, though. And Dallas right now is settling for outside shots, but they are getting second chances, so it remains to be seen exactly where this game and where this series is going to end up going. I think we're going to have a lot better idea at the end of this game than we do right now. And Jason Kidd just scored a 3, speaking of Jason Kidd. So, you know, it's again, it's going to be interesting to see where this goes and whether James and Wade can be as effective against Dallas as they were against Boston and Chicago in the previous two series.
Yep, I agree. I think it's going to be a very entertaining series altogether. And hey, we'll see. Now, we had mentioned earlier today on the phone, would you be interested in coming back next week when this series is kind of the midway point and kind of breaking down the series for us?
I would love to, my friend. Absolutely. I think we'll have a lot better handle on the matchups and be able to talk about it with a lot more information at our disposal, and we'll be able to get a good thumb on the pulse of where this series is going a week from today.
Very good stuff. Hey, Jeff, if listeners want to check out your website, go ahead and what's your website again, if you would?
Thank you, my friend. I appreciate the shameless plug. That's NBA Overtime, and the URL on that is NBAOvertime.wordpress.com. We're your number one source for NBA information.
Good stuff. Ladies and gentlemen, Jeff Sack. It doesn't get much better than that. Jeff, thanks as always for coming on. Look forward to having you next week, man.
Ryan, look forward to it as well. Mike, thank you for all your help, and look forward to speaking to you gentlemen next week.
Take care, Jeff. Have a good one.
You too, my friend.
Hey, everyone. My name is Ryan. This is Unsigned, and that was Jeff Sack, former ESPN and Cleveland sportscaster. Great friend. One of the best in the business. You're not going to find many better than Mr. Jeff Sack. Good stuff. As we move on tonight here on Unsigned, we're going to step away from the sports section. We're going to get off the path, go off the path, I should say. We do this every week where we basically do non-sports-related stories. I'm going to go ahead and lead off tonight with our top 10 at the box office. Starting with number 10, we work our way to number 1. Number 10 this week at the box office, Jumping the Broom, $1.8 million. The movie Rio, animated film, $1.8 million. Something Borrowed, $1.8 million. Number 7, Midnight in Paris, $1.9 million. The movie Fast Five, again, I gave my review a couple weeks ago. If you're a fan of the series, go see it. If you're not a fan of the series and you're just a fan of The Rock, you could probably wait for DVD or Redbox or something like that. 6.4 million. The movie Thor hanging in the top five at 9.4 million. Very solid film. Very good in 3D as well. Bridesmaids, getting very good reviews. A very funny film. Lots of good actresses in that film. 16.5 million. Number three, Pirates of the Caribbean on Stranger Tides at 39.5 million. Kung Fu Panda 2 featuring Jack Black, also an animated film, opening weekend, 47.8 million. And number one movie this holiday weekend, Memorial Day weekend at the box office, setting a record for the most money grossed on opening weekend by an R-rated film, the movie Hangover Part 2, 86 million through the holiday weekend. I did have a chance to go see this movie over the weekend. If you love Hangover 1, you're going to like Hangover 2. You just are. It's funny. It's clever. There's good jokes in it. Essentially the same cast, Ed Helms, Bradley Cooper, Zach Galifianakis. One of my favorite lines in the movie is, "I'm confused. Is this a magic show?" If you've seen the movie, you know what I'm talking about. If you haven't seen it, you're going to be like, "What in the world are they talking about?" All I'm going to say is, One Night in Bangkok, folks. One Night in Bangkok. Hangover 2. Go see it. If you got nothing better going on in the next week or so and you need a chuckle, you need a laugh, you've been feeling blue, Hangover 2 is just for you. Moving on here on Off the Path tonight, Gil Scott Heron, revolutionary poet, musician, died this past weekend at the age of 62. Revolutionary poet, musician Gil Scott Heron, best known for his 1970 work, The Revolution Will Not Be Televised, died May 27th at a New York City hospital. The exact cause of death is currently unknown, though he has been battling severe drug addiction and health issues over the years. Now, many hip-hop artists cite Scott Heron as one of the forefathers of the genre, but Scott Heron refused to take any credit. This is a quote. "I think they made a mistake," he told The New Yorker last year. He also feels that people misinterpreted "The Revolution Will Not Be Televised," a biting spoken word against the mass media and the consumist culture. "That was satire," he told the Telegraph in February of 2010. People would try to argue that it was a militant message. Just how militant can you really be when you're saying the revolution will not be televised? 5 pounds thinner? Question mark. Not sure exactly what he meant by that there. His songs, Randy shared stages with Bruce Springsteen and other legendary musicians throughout the 70s and the 80s. Poet, musician Scott Heron died at the age of 62, May the 27th, at a New York hospital. On to brighter news. Fans who stuck around for a second encore at the Mike Watt Show at the Triple Door in Seattle this past week were treated to an impromptu performance of Watt's song Big Train that featured, get this, this features Pearl Jam Eddie Vedder playing guitar and singing, Dave Grohl on the drums, Pat Smear of Nirvana, and the Foo Fighters on bass. You know, basically come out and jam for 10 minutes. Eddie Vedder on guitars and vocal, Dave Gray pounding away, you know, like only Dave Grohl can do behind a drum kit. Luckily, someone did stick around and actually film the rare occurrence. You can go to rollingstone.com and find the video for that. Very good stuff. I listened to it earlier today. Not the greatest recording ever, but, you know, pretty good stuff. And I figured it was worth noting that, you know, when you get that type of impromptu performance of, you know, Eddie Vedder and Dave Grohl and Pat Smear, I mean, that's a who's who of 90s modern rock. It really is. So very good stuff there. And that concludes tonight's version of Off the Path. My name is Ryan. This is Unsigned. Now, I'm going to head into a topic that's a little sensitive for me and a lot of people in the Columbus, Ohio area. And I think I know I think you know where I'm going here, and I'm going to go ahead and open up the phone lines. If there's anyone out there that wants to chime in on the Jim Tressel situation and the Iowa State Buckeyes, by all means, go ahead. The number is 724-444-7444. Caller ID 939-64-POUND. The PIN number is 1 and pound. Now, I'm going to go ahead and say my piece here, and we'll move on with this. It's been pretty much overdone. Mike, would you say that ESPN has basically rubbed Jim Tressel into dust over the past weekend?
I couldn't agree more. I couldn't agree more.
I mean, to do this to Jim Tressel, granted, he lied, yada, yada, yada. We all know, you know, most of the story here, and I'm going to go ahead and say my piece, and we'll go on, because I think Jim Tressel has been ostracized enough by the talking heads of ESPN. They're like, holiday weekend, we got nothing to report. Oh, Jim Tressel news? Let's run it on the hour, every 15 minutes, every 20 minutes, special update. How many Ohio State Buckeyes can we interview this today? Heck, I heard Steve Belisari was interviewed on 104.5 The Zone here in Nashville. Really? I hate to use the word really, but come on, man. Steve Belisari, he was at Ohio State 1 year with Jim Tressel. From 1998 to 2001. Steve Belisari, what does he have to say about Ohio State? Don't care. Anyway, moving on. Well, on December the 22nd of 2010, the reports, as we know, surfaced about Jim Tressel and his players selling memorabilia for tattoos. Now, I said at the time on Twitter and on other social sites, it sounds like trouble for the Buckeye faithful. Now, some people said, it's not a big deal. They just brushed it off. They brushed it off. It's no big deal. They're just witch hunting. They're just witch hunting. You know what? And maybe so. And looking at the news through ESPN this past weekend, especially yesterday, my goodness, it definitely does appear to be witch hunt-like. With that all being said, Jim Tressel knew, it comes out that Jim Tressel did know that these guys were doing this and that he did cover it up. Now, and I also said on the show, no one coach, I said this back in March, late March, early April, when the Bruce Pearl situation in Tennessee came about. No one coach is bigger than the program, period. Now, in light of recent events, Jim Tressel and his 10-year run at The Ohio State ended this past Monday, as we know. Now, this is a man who, by many, including the talking heads of ESPN, is a well-spoken man, has great integrity, and is honored and respected. Jim Tressel won a national title in 2002, 7 Big Ten titles, an overall record of 106 wins and 22 losses, and more BCS bowl game appearances than any school in NCAA history. Jim Tressel also, despite all his football records and his titles and his victories on the field, he was a leader of young men, a teacher, a mentor, and not to mention a stellar citizen in the community of Columbus and a major contributor to the James Kenser Center in Columbus, Ohio alone. Just that those stories about Jim Tressel alone and the James Kenser Center and what he did for the community and what his wife did in the community in Columbus, all those things put together are larger than what happened yesterday. Larger than any one football game, larger than any one season on the field. Now, I feel a former Ohio State Buckeye running back, Chris Beanie Wells, said it best. He said on ESPN this morning, he said, Trent Tressel wasn't worried about his legacy. He was protecting his players. He stood up for what he thought was right. He stood up for his kids. He wasn't worried about, you know, what the media is going to say. He didn't worry about any of those things, where maybe other coaches were. Now, let's not lose sight of this. We're not talking drug allegations. We're not talking illegal guns or drug trafficking or anything. We are talking tattoos. We're talking merchandise and rings that these 18, 19, and 20-year-old kids earned themselves. They earned them. They were not handed to them. They were not gifted to them. They were put in a position to do something and succeed, and they earned the right to have those items of merchandise, rings, so on and so forth. They earned that right to have those items, their rings, their merchandise, their jerseys, to call it their own, their property. Now, for Jim Tressel to be ostracized and to be taken out of context, such as he has been over ESPN and all kinds of other forms of media, I don't think is right. But with that being said, when you look and you have a young man, 17, 18, 19 years old, and you send him away to Ohio State, what that did tell me is that, you know what, no matter what, Jim Tressel is going to do the right thing for that young man, whether it be protecting him, mentoring him, teaching him lessons that are greater than what happens on the football field. Now, was it right that Jim Trussell lied about it? No, it wasn't. Was it right that he tried to cover it up? No, I'm not saying it was right. I think he knew it was wrong, despite of protecting his young athletes who made a mistake, and he was trying to help them develop and grow from that mistake. Unfortunately, it didn't turn out quite, obviously, the way he wanted it to. Now, as a mentor and a teacher and a student, Jim Trussell, you know, protecting his students, I think it's a shame for a man to lose his job over a mistakes of 18, 19-year-old young men over property, again, that they earned. Now, this topic can be viewed and pulled apart in many different ways and viewpoints. And all I can say is Jim Trussell and the Ohio State football program, when this is said and done, when the investigation is over, the NCAA football will forever be changed in how their rules of many are enforced for the few. Again, was it wrong? Yes. Did he lie? Yes. Is this issue larger than tattoos and selling rings and autographed jerseys? Yeah, I think it is. You know, we have allegations now coming out about issues with vehicles being registered to players, some over 40 players spanning over, at least 4 years, and the statute of limitations is according to the NCAA, being sold to players, automobiles, money. A lot of different things are coming out here that are rumors at this point. At this point, it's very hard to tell what's really real and what really isn't real. Now, the NCAA witch hunt is on, and the ESPN or talking heads are leading the charge. Now, we aren't going to know a lot of this until you circle this date on your calendar, if you'd like. August 12th is the day Ohio State will answer to the NCAA and their faulty system of rules and guidelines. August 12th. Jim Trussell was probably going to come across sanctions. I think the Ohio State program is going to come across major sanctions. I think once the smoke clears, Jim Trussell and my producer, Mike, we talked about this a little bit via email. What happens to Jim Trussell now? Now, I think when the dust settles and everything is over, do I think he'll coach again? No, I don't think Jim Trussell will coach again. I'd be surprised if he does coach again. In my opinion, I think Jim Trussell was probably only going to coach between 3 to 5 more seasons overall. That's without this issue happening. Now, the real issue at Ohio State is Gene Smith and Gordon Gee and the Ohio State Athletic Department. They have some explaining to do as to how these rumors and their serious allegations about automobiles being gifted to players at the Ohio State University football program. Now, do I think Ohio State's going to get the death penalty in this? No, I don't think they're going to get the death penalty per se, but I think it's going to come damn near close. I think we're talking about giving up 1 to 4 seasons of wins, Big Ten titles, BCS wins. I think we're talking postseason bans. I think we're talking loss of scholarships for recruiting. Now, I hope this really doesn't happen. I'm an Ohio State fan. I wear my Ohio State hat around here, and I live outside of Nashville area, and people criticize me. I have friends that I work with during my day job that criticize me. Oh, those Buckeyes, they're cheaters. I'm like, yeah, because the SEC is so squeaky clean, right? Let's not mention, the fact that Auburn and Cam Newton, that story is way worse. It's alleged this kid received $250,000 to play football at Auburn University, and he won a Heisman Trophy and a national title. Now, last I checked, receiving $250,000 is a heck of a lot worse than selling some of your own property for a tattoo, is it not? Oh, according to the NCAA, it isn't. As I said, when this is all said and done, come August 12th, when the dust settles, Jim Trussell's already gone. I think Terrell Pryor and a lot of those guys who are serving that is a current 5-game suspension are going to be suspended their whole senior year. Now, the NFL supplemental draft is coming up. I would suggest that Terrell Pryor and some of those other gentlemen entertain the idea of participating in that, because I believe their collegiate careers are over. Now, as far as the investigations of the NCAA and what their findings are going to be, again, it remains to be seen. But I think, again, The NCAA rules and regulations on how these programs are handled from a football program standpoint are going to change after this is said and done. The Ohio State football program made $62.7 million last year. Very interesting. And I also find it hard to believe that Columbus, Ohio, of all the cities, all the major cities that these colleges are played at, Columbus, Ohio cannot be the only city that you walk into and see jerseys and autographed pictures hanging in bars, restaurants, and tattoo shops and what have you. If you feel that way, the NCAA, could, if they wanted to, they could look hard enough and every single major football program would be up for investigation right now. But the fact of the matter remains, the NCAA doesn't like to be lied to. And that's what happened. Jim Tressel lied to the NCAA. The cover-up is always worse than the crime. Darryl Ryder said it here last week. Send me your thoughts. If you're there, give me a buzz. If not, that's fine. Hit me on Twitter, Ryan_unsigned on Twitter. And I'll leave you with this. Vest in peace. Jim Tressel will be truly missed. A true classic. Moving on, there is other news that happened over the weekend, the sports weekend. The Indy 500, the 100th race of the Indy 500 at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway took place. And it was a good one. It was. Now, before I get into the race, if you've never been to the Indy 500, you owe yourself, even if you're not a racing fan. I'm not a huge racing fan. I'm really not. And I've been to the Indy 500. I went in 2007. And I'll tell you what, it is a spectacle to behold. It's hot, yes. The weather was hot the day I went to. But you know what? It was amazing. You know, the cars flying around, the wrecks, you know, the endless sea of people, the different characters and personalities run into. For the most part, I would say 95% of the crowd was wonderful. Now you have your few idiots like anywhere, of course. Tailgating, food, music. Racing, really good time. It's definitely worth a Memorial Day weekend trip to the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Now, with that being said, the Indy 500 celebrated its centennial 100th race in its very, very rich history. And Dan Weldon, who led the final lap with 1,000 feet to go before the checkered flag, shocked the crowd of over 300,000 people that witnessed the annual race, and he would win it, only because rookie J.R. Hildebrand would become the newcomer, almost became the first rookie to win since 2001 of the Indy 500, crashed into turn four. Ah, I tell you. I feel for that kid. He had the Indianapolis 500 as a rookie. He had it won, going into turn four and racked into the wall. I think the pressure may have been too great. He had a four-second lead over Weldon. Dan Weldon, who ended up winning the race, it's the second time that he did win the race and the Indianapolis 500. So congratulations to Dan Weldon. Unfortunately, J.R. Hildebrand's accident cost him the win. And someone will always remember second. A very tough way to lose, especially for a young racer, but he proved that he's got the stuff, so hopefully he'll be back in the Formula One circuit. Danica Patrick led for about 12 laps in the race. She's going to be going to NASCAR full-time. So congratulations to her. She wrecked the year I went in 2007. Unfortunate wreck. There was a lot of wrecks that year. I don't know if I'm a bad luck charm or not, but I don't remember ever being so many wrecks at the Indy 500 in the years that I've paid attention to it. Again, I'm not a huge race fan, but I was like, man, is there really this many wrecks at the Indy 500, or is it just me? I've been known to have been in a few wrecks here or there. That concludes our version of the Indy 500 here on Unsigned. My name is Ryan. Again, thanks for hanging out with me. I do appreciate it. And we're heading into our one and only Major League Baseball recap. The AL East. It's a three-team race. It's in full swing. The Yankees find themselves in a tie with you-know-who, their rival, the Boston Red Sox. The Tampa Bay Rays are 1.5 games out of first place right now, but the Rays have lost 7 of their last 10, slumping a little bit. But everyone said, you know, in April, the Red Sox are out of it. They're done. They lost six. They lost their first six games. Oh, guess what? They're tied for first place right now with the Yankees, who have, by Yankee standards, have not played very well this season. They need some pitching. I look for them to address it at the trade deadline. The AL Central, the Indians, hit a bit of a slump here this past week. Injuries have played a big part in that. Sizemore and Hafner, I think Hafner is back in the lineup tonight. But even still, they played 500 ball in their last 10 games, and they still have a five-game lead on the Central Division. The Tigers and White Sox, with the Indians slumping, really had a chance to, you know, gain some ground, and both those teams went 5-for-5 out of their last 10. So nothing, you know, really interesting to report. The Indians lost the game, but lost two games. They still have a five-game lead on the division. And Hafner and Sizemore are going to be coming back here, and we head into the month of June. So the Indians still with a nice cushion and nice young pitching. And Estrubio Cabrera has been phenomenal, by the way, shortstop for the Cleveland Indians. He has a play that's actually up for the play of the year. It was a one-hander he caught with his right hand and flipped behind his back to second base for a double play. Very nice. Very, very nice play. One of the best you might see this season. Now we head into the AL West. The Rangers holding a one-game lead over the Anaheim Angels. Former Indians skipper Eric Wedge has his Seattle Mariners in striking distance, only a game and a half back, and winning 8 of their last 10 here through the weekend. Very good stuff in the AL West. Now we move to the National League. Again, the Philadelphia Phillies continue their strong play and hold a solid first-place lead with behind great pitching and good hitting, three-game lead over the division. Now the Marlins and the Braves, they're right in striking distance. Again, only three games out. Oh, Mets fans, yes, this just in. Yep. That is a sinking ship. Yes, yes, yes. Oh, and the Mets have lost. Poor Mets. They lost. I mean, you know, what can you say, right? It's the Mets. Unbelievable. 8 of their last 10, by the way. This just 10. Okay, now we go into the NL Central. Someone needs to tell the Cincinnati Reds to wake up. It's only May. The season's not over. Wow. They lost 6 in a row, got swept by the Indians 2 weekends ago, and you know they were playing the Phillies. They lost a couple games. They've lost 7 out of their last 10. And they've really dug themselves a big hole, now a four-game hole behind the, you know, the Milwaukee Brewers have passed them up now, and the St. Louis Cardinals hold a 2.5-game lead on the division, a four-game lead over the Reds. The Reds, they need to be careful. The Brewers need to be careful because the Cardinals, if they start getting hot, Albert Pujols starts swinging the bat. They could really create some distance here in June. The St. Louis Cardinals could run away with the division. Now, do I anticipate that happening? No, I think the Reds are going to wake up and get back to playing solid baseball, but that remains to be seen. Moving on to the NL West. I swear this is not a misprint. The Arizona Diamondbacks have won 7 in a row, 9 of their last 10, and find themselves sitting atop the NL West at what many thought was going to be a two-team race between the Rockies and the defending champion, San Francisco Giants. And then the Rockies are in a tailspin. We talked about this last week with Darryl Rider. They have some serious injuries to their pitching staff as well. And the Giants have injuries now to their catcher. Is going to be out, I believe, 6 to 8 weeks with a broken tibula. That's the bone in your thigh there, that very painful injury. But that being said, with the Diamondbacks, you know, winning 9 of their last 10, the Giants are only a half game out of first place. It'd be interesting to see if the Arizona Diamondbacks can keep this pace up. They were basement dwellers for the first quarter of the season. They looked horrible. They had an ERA of over 5.8. Now their ERA is down around 3. They're hitting. They look good. It must be the heat. Get the Diamondbacks into it as we head into June. It'll be interesting to see if they can keep that pace. So that's all I got for tonight, folks. I think we had a pretty good show. My name is Ryan. This is Unsigned. That concludes the Major League Baseball recap. Again, I want to bring up something I brought up at the very top of the show. Tonight's episode will be our last where we both do video and audio that are going to be available after the live broadcast. No more video or audio, or no more video available after the live broadcast. Obviously, we're going to be doing audio, right? Jeez. Starting next week, only MP3 audio will be available as a downloadable podcast. If you subscribe to iTunes or RSS video feed, please subscribe to the MP3 audio version for future broadcasts. The live show will still be available through a video feed. And also, I want to give a big shout out to @CookerCarolyn. Check out her cookbook on Twitter, @CookerCarolyn. Lots of good stuff, as always, on there. You can always contact her on Twitter for information on how to order that cookbook. A lot of great recipes. If you didn't order it for the holiday weekend, you missed out. You still have time. 4th of July is right around the corner. You have plans for a big cookout or something. Now's the time to jump on it. It really is. Fried chicken. Lots of desserts. Mike can attest to this. How's that hummingbird cake, Mike?
Stuck on mute, Ryan, but the hummingbird cake is delicious.
There you go. You heard it here. Hummingbird cake is delicious, and I can testify to that. Testify! Hummingbird cake is delight. Cooker Carolyn, check her out on Twitter, @CookerCarolyn, for information on her cookbook and her new recipes as well. Mike, again, I want to thank you for doing a wonderful show, and special thanks to a wonderful guy that I've known for a very long time, one of the best in the business, Jeff Sack, for coming on talking some NBA finals with us. He'll be back next week as well, so very good stuff, so definitely check that out. Looking to have Dale Ryder on again as well here in the next coming weeks, so definitely stay tuned for that as well, talking some Major League Baseball, and maybe we get him to talk some Ohio State football as well, and Jim Trust, so that'd be interesting to hear his take on it. Well, hey, that's all I got for tonight. Again, my name is Ryan. This is Unsigned. It seems harder to enjoy the finer things in life. Until next time, do so, everybody. See you next week.